Coming up on Golf Today, it was a thrilling Sunday at Riviera as a red-hot Hideki Matsuyama makes it into the winner's circle for a ninth time on tour. Just how superb was his performance? We will discuss. And what are our takeaways from Tiger's 2024 debut, which was cut short due to a Friday WD? And when will we see the big cat next? That conversation is on the way. And stay tuned for a Riviera roundtable as author Shane Ryan and Global Golf host Ron Green Jr. join the show to recap the week that was in Southern California. All that and more as Golf Today starts right now.
That was Hideki's ninth career victory on the PGA Tour in his 250th start. He wins by three, set the tournament record for the lowest final round score. At Riviera, Phil Rogers also shot a 62 back in 1962, but that was at Rancho Municipal Golf Course. And here are the notes on Hideki's victory at the Genesis Invitational. It's the largest final round comeback on the PGA Tour since John Rahm came from six back of Colin Morikawa in January 23 at the Century. And the 8.471 final round strokes gain is the highest in the final round by a tour winner since Rory McIlroy shot 61 to win the Canadian Open in June last year. And he is one of the more fascinating guys on tour, Matt, in the sense that he goes AWOL for very long periods. This win puts him back up to 20th in the world. The surprising part of that to me is that he'd actually fallen as far as 55th. Mm-hmm. He's a guy who deals with a lot of injuries. He's got a brittle body. There have been back injuries, neck injuries. But this was the Hideki of old. This was the Hideki we've seen win at Muirfield Village and at Firestone and at Augusta National and all of these great venues. What was different this week that we haven't seen over the course of the last year, frankly?
Well, what you were just alluding to, where he had these great performances, and I'd throw the Zozo in there as well, the Sony, where he had that great three-wood. He seems to all of a sudden jump into a phone booth and become super Hideki. But why? What's the difference between what changes him from solid, albeit relative mediocrity, to being one that can absolutely slay a field, trailing by six strokes coming in and end up winning by three? Take a look at this. Last season off the tee, kind of mediocre, 81st, just okay. His approach, though, those irons are always so good, 12th in his ranking. Putting 119th, not even close to average. Then you look at him from the week that just was, 2024 Genesis Invitational, 16th off the tee, starting to look very strong. His approach is always rock solid. Putting from 119th last season on average to third at plus 4.298 strokes gained. Unbelievable. Even in the final round, his driving hung in there, 25th. His approach all the way up to second. Again, we just saw why that was happening. Putting, sixth place. Absolutely rock solid for Hideki Matsuyama. That is what makes him different. And when the putter is on song, and to some extent, in fairness, the driver as well, but especially that putter, that's when he becomes super Hideki.
And over the course of a full season, Hideki's proven himself to be almost peerless among ball strikers over the last six, 7 years on tour. But you're right on the putting. He was 97th on tour in putting back in 2019. That's the only time recently he's actually been ranked inside the top 100 in that category. And it was interesting to see how he actually found his strengths during the course of the weeks. In the first round on Thursday, in a field of 80 guys, he ranked 66th in strokes gained approach. Lost almost 2.5 strokes to the field. As you just pointed out, he ranked second in that category on Sunday, gaining almost 2.5 strokes on the field. So I suppose if you can balance it out over the course of a week, you're doing well. But when you are as strong as he is, tee to green, it's almost a kind of, you see this with the Scottie Scheffler as well. If that short stick starts to cooperate, well, then you don't really have to be excellent on the greens because everything else is putting you close enough. You just have to be average. And Scottie Scheffler is average, worse than average a lot of times. He was dead last in the field this week in putting, and he was still in the mix on Sunday as well. But when you're a guy like Hideki Matsuyama, tee to green, and you don't really have that many peers, you don't need to be as good on the greens as everyone else, and he didn't need to be this week.
It just goes to show you, if you can be good in a couple of categories, even average to slightly better than average, and then that putter starts to work, that's when it really starts to flow. Now, tournament host Tiger Woods, as you know, he withdrew on Friday. He sent out this social media message in which he said, "Congratulations to Hideki on an incredible win at the Genesis Invitational. I was watching all day and seeing a record-breaking 62 and coming from six shots back is truly special." Here's a look at the Comcast Business Tour Top 10. With his win on Sunday, Hideki earned 700 FedEx Cup points and moves from number 57 to number 3 in FedEx Cup standings. Since 2009, every player who finished in the Comcast Business Tour Top 10 has made it to the Tour Championship at East Lake. So if players finish in the Top 10, odds are they're going to make it to the Tour Championship.
Well, in case you missed it, Jordan Spieth was disqualified after the second round of the Genesis Invitational for signing an incorrect scorecard. He inadvertently signed for a score of 3 on the fourth hole, but it actually made a 4. And this is his tweet. "Today I signed for an incorrect scorecard and stepped out of the scoring area after thinking I went through all procedures to make sure it was correct. Rules are rules. I'm going to take full responsibility. I love this tournament and golf course as much as any on the PGA Tour. So it hurts." So, Matt, there were a lot of people lining up to get on their fainting couches over the weekend when this happened, because you see it all the time. Every time there's a rules snafu that makes golf look stodgy or slightly ridiculous, people line up to make the rules seem as though they need a radical rewrite. Mm-hmm. And I don't buy that. We are literally at the point in this game where almost the only thing guys are asked to do, other than hit excellent shots now, is to accurately attest for their own score. Jordan Spieth owned this. Other guys have owned it in the past. You know, 24 years ago, Padraig Harrington led a European Tour event by 5 strokes and was told before he got to the first tee in the final round that he was being DQ'd because he hadn't actually signed his scorecard at all the previous day. So to me, I don't really see this being an issue. Clearly, Jordan Spieth doesn't see it as an issue either. Where are you on it?
I actually do see it somewhat as an issue. I get the purity of the fact that if we're playing together, you're keeping my score and I'm going to keep your score. And I don't have any problem with that. And I believe that that's the way it should continue to be. However, we have such technology at our disposal now that it would seem to me that when we go into the scoring tent or room or what have you, before we leave. Now, granted, we heard that Jordan was rushed there. He wasn't feeling well. He had to use the facilities. Nonetheless, if we're sitting and we're going through each other's cards to ensure that the numbers are right, I think as a last step, it's okay to use technology, even if the technology is incorrect upon review, to say, "Wait a minute, fellas, we got these cards back and there's just a disparity here or there," before you head out that door, before you run the risk of a DQ, because DQ is so severe a penalty. To me, that says that someone was trying to cheat. They were trying to fabricate a number on the card. I don't believe that was the case here. I believe a human mistake.
I don't even think that's the implication of the DQ. A DQ can be made for errors rather than any kind of nefarious intent.
That's a pretty severe penalty for an error. All I'm saying is that if we had something that was a final level of backup to say, we still kept each other's card, let's just check it before we go out the door to make sure something as simple as this doesn't happen.
I get that no matter where it's collected from, there's always the potential that there could be errors in there. To me, it's always going to be on the player. Let's ask them to still do something as part of their job or take responsibility for something. But Spieth may have lost a chance to compete over the weekend, but he didn't lose his sense of humour about it. He posted this to social media after Hideki's win. "Great playing, Hideki. Just make sure you double-check that scorecard." Well, another guy who made a lot of news without playing the weekend at Riviera, this guy, the host, Tiger Woods. He WD'd on Friday with illness. After the break, we're going to take a closer look at what was yet another disappointing week for Tiger fans. We'll be right back. Well, on Friday, Woods withdrew with illness after just 6 holes of the second round. It's an all too painful sight these days of Tiger being carted off the golf course. It was his first start of 2024, in fact, his first official tour event since withdrawing from the Masters in 2023 before completing the third round. And Tiger later took to social media to explain, said, "I would like to confirm that I had to withdraw from the Genesis Invitational due to illness, which we now know is influenza. I am resting and feeling better. Good luck to the players this weekend. I'm disappointed to not be there, and want to thank Genesis USA and all the fans for the support. So there's a relief in this, Matt, in the sense that it's physical only in the sense that it's temporary. He's not suggesting there's any injuries, although the back spasms line when he hit that shank on 18, I suppose, was a matter of some concern. But he doesn't look physically compromised in the long term. But it's another disappointing week. We begin all of these weeks when Tiger's coming back on tour with a sense of anticipation, and it just seems to dissolve into disappointment. I guess we're all looking for the next chapter. We all want to think there's more to come. But it's starting to feel more like it's epilogue at this point, that we got our last chapter at the 2019 Masters, unexpectedly so. And everything since then has just been a little bit of a disappointment.
I think the underpinning of the game of golf is always hope, isn't it? But if you take a look at this graphic where you can see what Tiger has done in recent starts, before you look forward, it always helps to look back. Now, again, he's Tiger Woods, and the recent version of Tiger Woods is one that has been impacted by many, many things, not the least of which are those physical ailments that Eamon was just alluding to. But if you look across that board between the withdrawals and missed cuts and mediocre performances, say for the Hero World Challenge, where he was 18th, but remember, that was out of a total of 20 players. I'm actually somewhat amused by the way we come into the week that you were just alluding to, because the press conferences tend to always go the same. Tiger comes in and he sits before the media, and someone in the media will timidly say, Tiger, you know, what are your expectations for the week? And Tiger will look back at them with that blank stare and he'll say, I'm here to win. Everyone goes, okay. But that's the Tiger that we've known for years and years and years. And so the follow-up question is always, well, are you ready? What are you doing? How much preparation do you have? He says, yeah, I've been working in the yard. I've been playing a lot of games. I've been out there practicing a lot. I really feel like I'm ready to go. And what he does is he sparks that hope within us. As fans, we want to see Tiger play well. With obligatory social media shots of Tiger on the range, absolutely crushing it. Then he goes out and he shoots an okay opening round in which we all sit back and go, maybe he's going to come back and shoot a 65. And I get that it's against reality, yeah, right? But the question is, while Tiger is going to bristle at the suggestion that he is a ceremonial golfer at any time, we still get a chance at least to see him hitting golf shots. The question is, what's reasonable to expect, really? What's reasonable to expect? And at this point, I think it's the hope that Tiger can just make a cut.
And I think what the 2019 Masters told us is that Tiger has to be opportunistic to succeed. Now, he really has to run the table. Other guys have got to mess up. Tiger's got to be on his game. There's no reasonable expectation where Tiger should be on his game. Now, he's so physically compromised and so rusty in terms of a skill set right now. The desire isn't going to go away, and nor should we ever expect him to sit there and say, yeah, well, my objective is to reach the seventh or eighth tee on Friday, because that's why he's Tiger Woods. He's always believed he was going to go there and win. But that's just the romanticism and sentimentality of fans. We all want to believe that there's another bullet left in the chamber. And as long as he believes there is, then I don't see fans backing away from that belief either.
The comedy element of it is when Tiger does have to leave after a sixth or seventh hole and the media says, well, what happened? He goes, guys, I got a fuse back.
Well, he's got a built-in excuse. We've all got that. Well, Tiger and Jordan didn't have great weeks of the Genesis Invitational, but our next guest did. Chase Johnson was the recipient this year's Charlie Sifford Memorial Exemption, which encourages the advancement of diversity in this game. Chase was the Player of the Year on the Advocates PGA Tour and made the most of his spot in the field at the Genesis, where he made the cut. And here's a quick look at the bio of Chase Johnson, the 2016 Mac Player of the Year at Kent State. 34 career starts on the Corn Ferry Tour. As we noted, Player of the Year last year on the APGA. 5 career starts on the PGA Tour, and his best finish just came yesterday, 51st, at the Genesis Invitational. And Chase is back with us now, having just joined us last week in advance of playing in the Genesis. Chase, congratulations on the week. I'm curious what the nerves were like on Friday, because you've made more cuts than you've missed on the PGA Tour, but this was a different scenario at this venue, at Tiger's event, at a field of this calibre. Were you nervous coming down the stretch on Friday?
Absolutely. First, thanks, guys, for having me. Last week was incredible. It was, you know, like I've said the entire week leading up to the event, a test against the best players in the world. And, yeah, for sure, I knew where I was with 4 holes to go. And knew the number that I kind of needed to post. And yeah, for sure, I was nervous coming down those holes. But, you know, I just kept in my routine, stayed loose with my caddy, had worked a little bit with a breathing coach earlier in the week, and just kind of reflected on that stuff and just tried to stay in the moment and execute the shots to the best of my ability, and gave myself a couple good birdie looks on 16 and 17, and then just trusted my short game and the work I put in on 18 to get that one up and down.
Chase, my question is somewhat related to that. I know you were with us last week before the start of the tournament proper, but when you have these starts on the PGA Tour, do you still feel like every start is an audition?
For sure. Until you're full status, you kind of have to look at it that way. And, you know, some auditions can go really well and you get the part. You know, it's an opportunity. And the more you get, the more comfortable you get out there. I'm definitely way more comfortable than my first PGA Tour start. And now I just have to figure out how to continue to improve on the weekend, and rather than just make the cuts. Again, my goal always is to win, but once you kind of get those first couple cuts off your shoulder, now you look to see how you can improve and where you're lacking. And so I'm starting to understand where I'm losing strokes at on the weekend, and we're just going to work to nail the next audition and hopefully get the full-time part.
Where are you finding that room for growth, Chase? Because you're now finding yourself on the golf course and on the range next to the very best players in the world. So presumably you're coming away with a very detailed sense of where the improvement needs to happen. What are you learning?
I'm learning that my ball striking and my grinding and my short game is there. It's the putter for me. My putter was really cold. I had my best ball striking day of the week on Saturday, and felt like I played really well and had a lot of burnt edges and a lot of just missed putts. So just got to figure out, you know, what's the issue, why they're not going in, whether it's just simply green reading or if I'm not matching the speed to the lines that I'm choosing. But I feel comfortable. I hit a lot of good putts. I didn't have any tentative putts, so that's good. Confidence is still high, even though they weren't going in. So just got to figure out a way to get those balls in the hole a little bit quicker, because at a course like Riviera, you're not going to be hitting it stiff to 2 feet all day. So those guys at the top of the leaderboard were knocking in putts.
Chase, you told us how excited you were to be playing in this event, and the fact that it is hosted by your hero, Tiger Woods, only added to that level of anticipation. I am curious, though, did you get a chance to see Tiger during the brief time that he was around last week? Did you get some personal time with him? Did you get that autograph you wanted?
I did get some personal time with him after his press conference on Wednesday. It was a nice private meeting. We were right there. We were walking back to the locker room, and I got to, you know, chat with him about how the course plays, how different it plays in the morning. Got to introduce him to my dad, which was incredible. But I had a glove in my back pocket. I did not have a Sharpie. It was the one moment I didn't have a Sharpie all week. All 20 people who were there, no one had a Sharpie. I was like, please, somebody just show up for me on this one. And he was like, don't worry, we'll take care of it at the end of the week. And, you know, unfortunately, you know, his illness and stuff caused him to leave early. But hopefully we can see him sometime down the road and finally get the autograph.
Tiger, if you're watching, you got to start carrying a Sharpie with you. No one gets asked more often than you do. Chase, coming out of Riviera, what does your competitive schedule look like then over the next couple of months as you try to build momentum on the weekend?
Well, first off, I had a red-eye flight. I can't sleep on planes, so I had a red-eye into Fort Lauderdale, dropped my fiance off at work, and drove up here to TPC Sawgrass, where I have an event tomorrow for the APGA Tour. Super excited to play, but I'm very excited to just get some sleep tonight going into it. After this, I have received a sponsor's exemption into the Cognizant Championship, so I'm looking forward to, or the Cognizant Classic, sorry, and looking forward to hopefully, you know, build on the momentum I had coming from last week and improve on that 51st finish, and again, just see how many points I can rack up by the end of the year and earn some temp status. But we'll be playing a full APGA schedule and Mondays to try and rack up some points for PGA Tour.
Well, Chase, congratulations with everything that you have accomplished so far. We wish you the very, very best as you move on down the road.
Thank you guys so much. I appreciate it.
We're back on Golf Today. Yesterday in Los Angeles, it was Hideki Matsuyama shooting a final round 62 and winning the Genesis Invitational for his ninth career PGA Tour victory. West Coast winners, there you see the American Express, Nick Dunlap, absolutely shocking the field. Matthew Pavone at the Farmers, Wyndham Clark at Pebble Beach, Nick Taylor at the WM Phoenix Open, and then, of course, Hideki Matsuyama. Time now for a Golf Today roundtable as we welcome in GolfDigest.com contributor Shane Ryan and Global Golf Post Ron Green Jr. Okay, gents, I want to start with a comparison here. Hey, listen to this. Patrick Cantlay, 8 PGA Tour wins and 167 starts, all right? He had 6 wins from October of 2020 to August of 2022. He's had 0 wins since then. Best finish in a major, tied for third at the 2019 PGA Championship. He eventually lost by 6 to Brooks Koepka. Then Xander Schauffele, 7 PGA Tour wins and 167 starts. He turned pro in 2015. He did, however, win the gold medal at the last Olympics Games. His best performance in a major where he finished second a couple of times. Shane, here's I want to start with you if I can. When we're talking about Patrick Cantlay, when we're talking about Xander Schauffele, is it reasonable to say that our expectation level of what these two players would have accomplished to this point in their career has not yet been met?
Yeah, I think that's a really nice way to put it. I think that's entirely reasonable to say that. Let me put it mathematically. If you could develop a formula, which I think Mark Brody probably has, where you could say, based on how many PGA Tour events you've won, based on, you know, your quality of strokes gained and all that, how many majors are you expected to win? I think with Cantlay and Schauffele, you would both say it's at least above one major, right? So they have underperformed in majors. Schauffele has had a number of top 10 finishes. He's been good in majors. Cantley's resume is a little more disparate between the PGA Tour and majors, where he has seriously struggled to put up any really good finishes yet in majors. But again, it only takes one to change it, and it's a very, very small sample size majors, right? Justin Rose has won a major. Adam Scott's only won one major. Sergio Garcia only won one major. It's not easy. And so, yeah, I think what you said was very fair, and I think also at the same time, you know, they've got time. You know, we can give them a little bit of lenience, and I think one day they'll probably both win at least one.
I think when you look at those numbers and how similar they are, no wonder they're best friends. I mean, everything seems to fit together with them, how they play and, you know, what they do when they go on vacation and all that. I agree. You would have thought they would have done more in majors. I mean, what is it between them? 15 tour victories. But, you know, I just pushing it through that last line, you sort of expect. Friday night, I would have thought surely Patrick Cantlay was going to win at Genesis. But you go back and look at his final round scoring average this year. I think he's 151st on tour in scoring average in the final round. And, I mean, that's the wrong way. I think first maybe in first round scoring average. I just think there's just that edge there. I mean, I go back to last year at Wells Fargo. I thought sure Xander Schauffele was going to go finish it off and do what you do to win tournaments. Suddenly Wyndham Clark's the guy who does it. And I don't know. It's just I feel sure they're going to be there in major championships. I mean, you can count on Xander Schauffele being in the top 10 in the U.S. Open. And I think one of these days it's going to fall right for him. Somebody else maybe helps him. Maybe, you know, the putt that hadn't gone in the last 2 or 3 years goes in this time. They're so good and so steady. I still expect it to happen.
Given how flat they both played while paired together yesterday, you could also make an argument, I suppose, that it might be better to play with guys that you have a bit of an edge with rather than a guy who's a friend out there. Tiger never had a problem playing with anyone because there was always an edge and he always wanted to beat them. Ron, you've been watching the Tiger decline as long as any of us at this point. It just seems to be an endless series of disappointments now. Are we kidding ourselves that there's another chapter to be written that is inside the ropes versus what he's actually doing in terms of taking on a role outside the ropes?
I guess I'm guilty of being one of those hopeless romantics who hopes there's something there. I mean, the reality is he's 48 years old now and all that he's been through. I think what I was reminded of at Riviera is just how precious these moments are that he can still go out there and we can still at least think he's going to be competitive and maybe will be later this year. But, you know, this was never going to last forever. And there was a time 2 or 3 years ago we thought we wouldn't see him at all anymore. So it's disappointing when he can't finish and doesn't, you know, has a week like what happened at Riviera, because there were a lot of good things. He had a lot of good shots. I walked with him, watched a lot. He seemed to have that pep, that energy. And we've gotten to the point where we didn't have to think so much about his physical condition and could he play golf. It was just how he was going to play golf. And then suddenly we get the abrupt ending Friday. I'm not ready to say never yet, but I know there aren't going to be many more opportunities.
I'm also not ready to say never, but in my case, it's because in 2015, I wrote a piece for Golf Digest called Tiger Woods is Totally Unequivocally and, you know, Permanently Done. And that was, of course, 3 years before he went on and won another major. And Eamon, you're on Twitter. You know how people react on Twitter when you're a little bit wrong. When you're incredibly wrong, like I was, probably the social media lowlight of my entire life. So now I'm very cautious about not being optimistic. You know, it's for my own personal preservation that I say you can never rule Tiger Woods out. But in my more honest, you know, contemplative moments, it does seem, just like you said, like we have a series of kind of diminishing returns and it gets worse all the time. Take him at his word that this time it was just flu. You know, that's not Father Time, right? That's just bad luck. That's a virus that anybody could get. So let's play a little bit of wait and see. But it's hard to be too optimistic unless you're like me and you're protecting yourself from the worst people of the internet.
All right, gents. I want to ask you about Jordan Spieth getting a DQ for signing an incorrect scorecard. And Ron, if I can start with you on this one, I guess the simple question that I have is, did the punishment fit the crime in 2024?
Well, I mean, I think that's the rule. I mean, he broke the rule that comes with a disqualification. I know there's talk about should we change that rule. I mean, is it really that hard to get 18 numbers right and you've got people helping you? I think we stick with it. I think we stay with the rule as it is. You know, we've had all this talk about bifurcating the game. I mean, if we do it in, say, a city championship, do what he did, would be DQ'd. We don't have somebody there keeping our card. So I'm not ready to change it, say it's a two-shot penalty. I get the whole argument that, well, you want to have Jordan Spieth there for the weekend. You know, we all know what he did. He wasn't trying to subvert the system, but that's my traditionalist. I'll go use all the new equipment, try all the new gadgets and everything, but I would stick with this rule.
Okay, with all due respect to Mr. Green, who I think is one of the best in our business, this to me is fundamentally and totally absurd. You have ShotLink out there, which not only for Jordan Spieth, but for every single player in the field, tracks every single shot they make. As Ron said, you cannot cheat the system, right? The minute Jordan Spieth got a number wrong, he knew that a second later he was going to be disqualified because somebody's going to say, actually, you got a 4 on that hole. You didn't get a 3. So with the fact that we track all this already and the fact that you can't cheat it, what is the purpose of signing your scorecard on the PGA Tour? Completely get it at lower levels, obviously. But on the PGA Tour, it's crazy. All it does in this case is hurt Jordan Spieth. For the PGA Tour, it takes like a dynamite player away from the weekend, so it hurts them. The only person it really helps is the one guy, whoever it was, who made the cut that wasn't going to otherwise. And I know, like, I'm saying the same thing that a lot of people are saying, but I'll squeeze the last bit of toothpaste out of the tube here and say that common sense dictates in 2024, we can't punish a guy like this. It is absurd. It makes me mad, even though I'm laughing. Inside, I'm steaming, and I think Jordan Spieth didn't deserve it, and come on, let's come into the modern era. We don't need this anymore.
Oh, stop the, with you, stop the crybaby yes. stuff here, Shane. Literally, it's the only thing these guys have to do is to accurately attest to their score. And we know from week in and week out that ShotLink is not always entirely accurate either. Surely these guys can do basic math and be accountable for that.
But why, Eamon? It's ignoring the question of why. Imagine that you play an NBA game, Steph Curry wins on a buzzer beater for the Golden State Warriors, and they say, well, before it's official, Steph, what was your shooting percentage today from the three-point line? And if you get it wrong, by the way, your team loses the game. It is getting into absurd, ridiculous
territories. Well, his shooting percentage doesn't declare whether it's irrelevant to the actual final score of the game. I think Jordan Spieth and every golfer on the tour has to attest to their own score.
I think we're getting lost in the weeds here. Be done with it. Common sense. Let common sense rule.
Just give everybody the Golf Genius app and let them keep their scores on their phones like we do at our clubs everywhere else.
Oh, boy. It never ends with these guys. Thanks for joining us, guys. Enjoyed the conversation. We'll do it again someday.
Thanks.
Have a good one.
Well, if you're in the market for a podcast, don't forget to check out the Golf Today podcast, which includes the best interviews and conversations from our show, like that one we just had. And be sure to subscribe to the Golf Channel YouTube page. Plenty of good content being uploaded there daily. We'll be right back.
We're back on Golf Today. Flashback to last year when Tony Finau fired a final round of 66 to win the Mexico Open by 3 shots. It was Tony's 6th PGA Tour victory. This week, the PGA Tour returns to Vallarta, Mexico, and today we're highlighting the Azteca High Performance Program, which was launched in late 2023. The program aims to provide resources for high-performing Latin American golfers. The plan is to recruit 7 men and 2 women, with at least 2 being juniors. Each golfer will receive academic tutoring, access to coaching, training, and tournament access. We're now joined by the director of this program, Santiago Casado. And Santiago, I guess the first place to start with this, of course, would be, why was this program created?
Well, basically, it's an initiative of Benjamin Salinas, vice president of Grupo Salinas and president of the Mexican Open at Vidanta. And his objective was really clear, no? To create a platform that offers all the elements to players to reach their goals.
Santiago, success can be a long time coming for different players. Some are, you know, ready to compete just coming out of junior or college golf. Others take a lot longer. Is there a time frame through which players that you select will be able to benefit from this program?
I think it's a great question. I think the most important thing, like I tell my staff and all the players, is that this is a process. Process is really important. We need to be patient, but it's a step-by-step. As we know, AJGA is an amazing place to start competing with the best in the world. Then be part of an amazing college program, so you'll be able to be part of the PGA Tour university ranking. And after that, you know, give yourself the opportunity to be part of the Korn Ferry Tour or the PGA Tour.
Santiago, building a program like this obviously is not easy to do. It takes work, it takes passion, it takes vision, but it also takes money. What are the potential out there for you to try to get sponsors for the program, and how is that going?
Well, this program is a dream come true. You know, all the advisory board, the staff, we recruit the best coaches in Latin America that have been part of players, process like Emiliano Grillo, you know, Cristobal del Solar, that we know that he just shot 57. But yes, it's a really important question. But this year, there is personally founded by Benjamin Salinas, and the idea is to invite more businessmen in the region, mostly in Mexico, you know, to invest in the future generations and give them the opportunity to reach their goals.
How do you define success moving forward, Santiago? Is it purely based in the results and performance of the players that you recruit, or are there different metrics by which you're going to judge the success of this program?
I think that the most important one is outside the golf course. No, it's really important for us to educate all these players, you know, with values. And after that, the most important thing is academics, no? If you want to be part of the program, it's mandatory, I think that's the word to explain it, to be, you know, in a high school. And after that, before turning professional, part of the process is to be in a college program.
Santiago, there's no doubt that you are changing lives with what you are doing. Thank you for joining us today and telling us more about the program.
Thank you very much for your time.
Well, coming up next, we're going to revisit some of the moments of joy we saw this weekend. I'm kind of known for my joy on a Monday, right, Matt?
No.
Stay with us.
It is time now for our top 5 moments of joy presented by FootJoy. It starts with Tiger Woods. This was his Sunday Red reveal of his new product line, Eamon.
We never quite got to see the Sunday Red, but he's there with David Abele, CEO of TaylorMade, who he's partnering with on this line.
Yeah, a nice little array of shots here of the different products. I can see you rocking those.
I need them with inserts at this point in life. But some Tiger fans on the golf course out at Riviera. When the GOAT shows up, the fans show up with him. Here we are in the inflatable Tiger costumes. I think you could rock those, Matt.
Question is, where do you get an effect? This is Shota, a little caddy appreciation here. Back in the winner's circle again with Hideki Matsuyama, and happy team photo too.
And then this was JT on the 16th hole. Unfortunately, it was Wednesday. You make a hole-in-one during the tournament, you get a car, caddy gets a car. As Oprah would say, everyone gets a car.
Well, it was a charity donation made with this one.
Yeah, but he didn't get a car. He ultimately missed the cut, finished 3-over for the week at Riviera.
Justin Thomas coming in. He said he was really feeling it. The game was starting to come around. We'll see how it goes from there. And this is Will Zalatoris. Now, this is during the tournament.
And he even gave the more expensive car to his caddy. He finished second this week, tied with Luke List, 14 under, just 3 strokes back, and playing with a heavy heart this week. He lost a close family member. But it's nice to see Will Zalatoris actually show the signs of the form that he had before the back injury knocked him out in the summer of 2022.
No doubt. I mean, it was so scary when a kid at 25 years old had to get back surgery, and with a more rotational golf swing that he's working on and that new putter that he's also using, maybe there's hope that his good form will carry on for Will Zalatoris, because he's definitely a very, very popular player. Now, this week in Mexico, Tony Finau, Charlie Hoffman, Nicolai Højgaard, Mackenzie Hughes, Francesco Molinari, Erik van Rooyen, Jonathan Vega, just some of the names that are in that field. We are starting our sweep. Eamon, we're going from the West Coast down to Mexico and then find our way to Florida and all that lies in store.
Yeah, and we can tell even from the field list in Mexico, as it was last year, a lot of the top players are taking the week off. They're catching their breath before they start to gear up for Honda, for Bay Hill, for the players. But this is when everyone else in this game has to start making a statement, because the opportunities to do so are fewer and fewer. We hear a lot of the rank and file players complain about the opportunity pool for them shrinking a little bit. This is one of the weeks where you'd expect guys like that to really step up and say, you know what, I want my share of these points. I want my share of the pot here, and try to play their way into the API.
So important, too, to play their way into the API, because that is the next signature event. Now, later on today on Golf Central, we will be talking about golf and the presidency. Loved your company today. Thank you for it, my friend. We're looking forward to being back with you again tomorrow. Bye for now.